Just a quick programming note, we had some audio difficulties, so it's going to sound a little bit different than normal, but still a very good pod worth listening to. Thanks. Hey everybody, and welcome to the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mo Docul, and today my guest is Tim Cato from SB Nation. He's the best guy to talk to considering how crazy the trade deadline was yesterday, so I immediately felt like I had to get him on the pod. So we're going to talk trade deadline, we're going to talk about a bunch of other things. So, Tim, you ready to tip it off?
Yeah, let's do it.
Perfect. Tim, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well.
Good, good. Let's just give the people what they want. Let's just talk about the big trade yesterday. Very weird day.
There's a bit going on, I would say. Yeah. I mean, we always kind of look forward to this one, but the thing that surprised me was just like how quickly the Cavaliers, like how quickly they went from one roster to another, and like we all knew they needed to do that, but to see it happen in that quick succession and just like, you know, rattling them off one by one by one, and then the Dwayne Wade thing did surprise me just because that wasn't on my radar at all. It was fascinating to see just how quickly they kind of turned things around like that.
And just to review for everybody, the Cavs basically shipped out Isaiah Thomas and Iman Shumpert. No, Channing Frye, excuse me. Isaiah Thomas.
Iman went in the deal too, yeah. He went to Sacramento.
Right. See, there was so much movement, it's hard to keep track of who went where. But we have IT and Channing Frye and the Cavs' first-round pick to the Lakers. The Cavs got Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance. They also shipped out Iman Shumpert to Sacramento, Jay Crowder and Derrick Rose to Utah. They also sent Dwayne Wade to Miami and in all return they also got George Hill and Rodney Hood. Second round pick went somewhere. I don't know where it went, but it's a second round pick, which will come back to bite me in the ass for saying that. But that went to one of the four or five teams they traded to. I mean, you're right. They rechanged their roster overnight.
Right. It's just like, you don't really see that necessarily. And again, like if any team was going to do it, we knew it was going to be the Cavaliers. Like it just wasn't working. I'm not actually sure how much better they are. I think they're better. I think they'll be a better regular season team. I think they're a little bit better equipped to be in the postseason. You know, obviously their ceiling with Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder could have been, I think their ceiling is lower. But it was pretty clear that wasn't working out, and at that point, you know, they kind of had to make some moves. I'm curious to hear what you think like their rotation and their starting lineup is going to look like, because I was trying to figure this out yesterday, and I think that, you know, it's they've got pieces to kind of revamp this lineup in a way that they can around LeBron and make it more of a LeBron, you know, classical LeBron team where it's him and three shooters and a role man.
Right.
Or even four shooters, you know, switching wings if they want it. But I guess that kind of depends on how the rotation shakes out.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny because, like, I think like most people, like, I immediately sat down, wrote out the roster and was trying to figure out who would start, who, you know, rotation stuff. The thing about it is, you know, I think J.R. Smith is still going to start over Rodney Hood. But I could see that changing over, you know, if Hood really kind of hits a stride very quickly, I could see that changing and then bringing Smith off the bench because he hasn't really been great this year. George Hill's a definite starter. You know, Clarkson coming off the bench and just being a scorer and kind of like when LeBron needs a rest or whatever, like let him go and fly through it. I think Larry Nance is a interesting piece for them. I think, you know, he brings an energy that they don't really have. A guy that can fly a little bit, you know, LeBron's, I mean, the lobs that LeBron might be throwing to Larry Nance could get really interesting, and that might be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I view him both as a guy who can kind of do what Jeff Green's been doing at the four and just, like, play smart and set screens, and, you know, I think Zach Lowe had a really interesting quote where it was some executive was saying that Larry Nance, you know, he's a guy who always, at all times when he's on the floor, he's always thinking about how he can make his team better. And, you know, whether that's, you know, a simple back pick or a, you know, diving for a loose ball or more traditional things like, you know, just, you know, flying and dunking and stuff like that. So I'm going to be interested to see him as a small ball five, but I definitely think, you know, if they want to use him at the 4-2, you know, he's not quite a shooter, but I think that, you know, Jeff Green, I think he will take a few of Jeff Green's minutes from there. And then beyond that, it's I'm curious to see how much they use him at the five when both Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson are healthy. You know, obviously, I think right now he will be playing a bit of five, backing up Thompson just because he has to. They don't have anybody else back there. But, you know, I'm curious to see whether they actually really want to run those small ball five lineups. And they're going to have a lot of good chances to look at it, you know, while Love is out. So, you know, I think that will probably impact how much they use that going forward.
And I also think I'm kind of excited to see Nance and Love on the floor together, because I think defensively Nance can make up for some of Love's deficiency. I think he'll be able to kind of provide some rim protecting and help out more on the boards. And I think with Love's ability to shoot, you know, that's a four that could stretch the floor and things like that. Overall, I just think, you know, this is something the Cavs haven't had all year, which is options. And not like these are all bad options, but we have to choose the lesser of two evils.
Right.
You know, they have options. Like, this was I'm impressed by Colby Altman's moves. Like, I thought they'd make one big move, you know, and it was funny. Like, they made the IT trade, and I just kind of was like, huh. And part of me was like, I don't know if they're finished yet. And then just we just cut, you know, Woj just started hitting us with bombs after bombs. I mean, within an hour, it was a whole new team. And the locker room was a mess. I mean, it's been terrible. You know, you have, you know, from the disastrous team meeting to, you know, to all sorts of just chaos and IT making comments. And it felt like Crowder never really got into the flow of things with the Cavs. Like, they just reset that thing. And I think what's going to happen is they may not be better, like, talent-wise, but I think we're going to get a motivated LeBron out of this group, which then takes this team to another level. Like, I didn't feel like he was – it's hard, dude. When you go work at a job you hate with people you hate, you don't work that hard. It's just human nature. And I felt like that was beginning to happen with LeBron, as he was just getting really kind of pissed off and tired of this group. And I think now we might see a lighter, maybe even a more fun LeBron.
It looked like he had put in his 2 weeks notice or something. Right. And, you know, it seriously, you were like, he wasn't, like, especially even on defense, there were some egregious defensive lapses. Or not lapses, it's like he does the right thing, but then he has just no interest in making up for his teammates' mistakes. And, like, LeBron historically has always been the guy who is, like, the ultimate, you know, if you play with him, he will, you know, he will make you look good. And he wasn't, like, making his teammates look good, you know, defensively in that Timberwolves game on Wednesday. And so I do think this is necessary. I do think the revamped locker room is very important. And I think that's, you know, as much as anything, you know, that and then the versatility that these new lineups and, you know, having players that do qualify, you know, as two-way players, at least aren't, you know, total black holes on one end. You know, like three of the guards they shipped out and Wade and Isaiah Thomas and Derrick Rose were, you know, I think that's big, that's important, and it's going to put a lot of pressure now on Tyronn Lue to figure this all out. But there are good lineups, I believe, that they can make out of this roster now.
They're an interesting team. Like, I'm very excited. I don't know if the guys are playing tonight in Atlanta, but they're an interesting team, and I'm looking forward to see them put this together. Now, it's also hard when you make this big of a trade mid-season. You got to get a lot of guys up to snuff. I mean, when I was a video coordinator, like, anytime we brought in a new guy, like, there was extra practice time. Like, you run 5-on-0 offense. You know, you have the coaching staff. Like, I've ran the offense a few times with whatever new piece we brought in and try to get them acclimated to our offensive and defensive schemes as quickly as possible. They brought in four pieces that are all going to play and play important roles if this team is going to go to the finals. And they got to get all these guys acclimated as quickly as possible so that they can start making a run. It's going to be an interesting thing, but I just think even for Ty Lue, like, this is an easier squad to coach. Like, of those four guys, like, how many of them have egos? Like, that we've heard. Like, you know, listen, George Hill was bad in Sacramento. I think my thing about George Hill is he's bad in bad situations, but he's really good in good situations.
Right, it wasn't a problem or like a locker room problem. Right. He just like didn't care.
Yeah, yeah. And listen, Sacramento's the organization's a shithole. sorry. Just the way they go about things. I mean, they just waived Papa Giannis, you know, after I believe they even picked up his third-year option. So, I mean, that just doesn't make sense. Like, that's a weird organization. So I don't blame him for getting there going, like, what the hell is going on here? You know, I think I like the moves. I think they're better than what they were, you know, two nights ago. And as you were saying about LeBron, his effort defensively has been awful all year. It's been an effort thing more than anything else. And
right.
And I think this might change that a bit.
I'm hopeful. It's gotta. Like at the level it's been, you know, like, I can't imagine it not getting somewhat better after this.
Yeah. Right. Let's. Do you have anything else about the Cavs side of this trade?
Nah, that sums it up.
Yeah. And don't worry. There's like a million other podcasts that are probably going to spend an hour and a half on it, so you guys can go listen to that. I want to talk a little bit about what the Lakers did, because I think they're also a really big winner from this trade. You know, I thought it was a win-win for both teams. I think the Lakers clearing up enough cap space to chase two superstars and get a draft pick out of the deal, I think is a pretty interesting move. What did you think of the Lakers end of the trade?
Yeah, I have a couple thoughts on kind of both sides. So let's say, you know, I think if LeBron and George, you know, come to the Lakers in the summer, even before this trade was done, and be like, hey, you know, we're coming here, make room for us. I'm almost positive they could have packaged Nance and Clarkson for something. So I don't think that, like, this trade necessarily cleared the way in the way it's kind of being framed. There's like, you know, they never would have had a chance at those two unless this trade happened. I'm pretty sure that, you know, they would have cleared the room necessary. That said, I don't think they get a first-round pick back from it. I think, you know, or Isaiah Thomas, you know, for however much you're going to value him.
Right.
So I definitely think that it was smart to do it now. You know, it made sense to do it now. And they got, like, actual value back for it. You know, a first-round pick for Cleveland, you know, it might be 24 or 25 or 26, but that's, you know, that's not nothing. That's a first. It was the only first-round pick to change hands on the trade deadline, as I think we're going to get into a little bit later. But you know, I think that it was a really nice move, and you know, they just wouldn't have got that type of value had it come over the summer. On the other hand, you know, I'm not bullish on their 2018 chances, right. but they needed to move on from those guys anyway. Like, I think it's a good move, not just for 2018, but you know, for 2019 and moving forward to get that Clarkson deal off the books, which is just kind of weighing on there. And you know, they have guards, and Clarkson has been there 3 years without ever really turning into anything other than a you know, not super efficient scorer who doesn't play defense. So, you know, I like him in Cleveland. I think that he can probably serve a role there. He may not crack their playoff rotation if he doesn't improve too much. But for the Lakers, the biggest thing was just getting that. I think it's, you know, like $26 million over 2 years, if I'm not mistaken. Getting that off the books was a good move in that direction. So, you know, I don't think that, you know, they would have lost out on the LeBron sweepstakes if they don't make these deals. I'm sure they would have figured something out. And that's still, those two players still could have been packaged to someone, I'm sure. But I definitely think this was the right move to make, and it makes sense, you know, whether they're active this free agency or whether they're active in 2019 or whenever you have it.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great way to put it all together. I think the one thing that goes unnoticed about people when they complain about cap space and you whiff on free agents, the important thing about cap space is it allows you to make moves. You know, you can take a contract to get a star, you know, and you know, with the amount of cap space they have, it puts them in an interesting position. Again, it gives them a whole lot more options that weren't available to them, you know, before the trade deadline. And you're right, they could have made moves this summer and they still might, you know, and kind of open things up, you know. And if they don't get Paul George and LeBron this summer, it's fine if they carry it over to next year. I actually don't think, like, I think they're better off just building with their young guys and waiting for the perfect guy to come along. But I'm in the minority. And also, when you have a chance to get LeBron, you get LeBron. I'm not crazy if anybody's going to go nuts here. But I just think it's a good moving forward for them, just having that cap space. There's going to be another disgruntled NBA star next year, you know, that they might be able to poach and just take right into their salary cap and all that fun stuff. There's one thing I meant to ask you about the Cavs thing. Sorry, before we, even though I said we should move on. Do you think that was enough to keep LeBron?
It's a good question, because I don't know where he would go. The more I look at it, the more I look at the teams. Like, I don't see a amazing situation for him out there. So I want to kind of look more, you know, I want to look deeper at what is out there and, you know, what teams could potentially be LeBron destinations. But there isn't one that just makes a ton of sense to me, especially with George. You know, the Lakers, I guess, made sense if you packaged him with Paul.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't think another star is out there. I'm pretty sure George is resigning at this point. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it depends on the playoffs. But it sure seems like he keeps indicating he wants to stay there.
Right.
And outside of that, you know, I don't think Houston can make the cap work unless CP3 takes a big cap hit or cap cut, salary cut. There it is. you know, I don't think the Sixers are interested. That'd be a weird fit with as many, you know, like I don't know how that'd work with Ben Simmons.
I actually
needs the ball in his hands.
I think the Sixers are a great fit for him.
And my
pitch for it, and I've been saying it for a while. I know Bobby Marks has been saying it lately on ESPN, but I've been on it for a bit. The way I look at it is, it allows LeBron to kind of pace himself throughout the year, and keep himself even more fresher or more fresh. My mastery of the English language is not as good as yours, Tim. But I think, you know, you're right. Like, Simmons needs to have the ball more, but I think we're shifting to an NBA where you need to have two playmakers on the floor at the same time. And I think that really even makes you deadlier as a team, you know, where Simmons comes off a pick and roll and the defense is rotating over and Embiid's rolling. And then you kick it to LeBron, whose end is attacking the rotating defense, you know, or vice versa. It's a difficult thing to defend. And it's, you know, I always refer to it as second side action. And I think that would make it a good fit in that sense. And then they don't have to do anything. You know, they don't have to move anybody right now. They'll have the cap space to bring LeBron in and pretty much keep the core together. So I kind of think that makes the most sense. Ideally, I actually think I'd like him to stay in Cleveland. I know he has a problem with Gilbert and all that stuff and issues, but you got to give Gilbert a little bit of credit here too, which just pains me a little bit because I don't like him that much. But he ponied up a ton of money to make these moves.
He did, yeah.
You know, and they kept the Brooklyn pick, which makes things even more interesting. Again, they can make another move on draft day. They could maybe draft a young stud, or, you know, package that pick with Kevin Love for something. You know, I mean, they're again, options is the key, and they have more. They'll have more come draft day.
Right. That's a good point, and I do think that, you know, does affect things and does. I see a future where he stays there. I do. I think that's a good way to put it. You know, if they can package that pick, if it's a high pick, you know, they would obviously have to move salary out to do that. So it would probably be a Kevin Love trade, like you note.
Right.
But I could see how that's possible. So
and he wasn't, and we can agree, right? Like, he wasn't staying if this team was the way it was.
No way. No way, not with that culture, not with that locker room. There's zero chance, and that team was going nowhere too. So it's like they were maybe not going to get out of the second round.
Yeah,
they were that broken.
Yeah, I mean, depending on who they matched up with in the first round, they would have been in a dogfight.
Right.
You know, let me ask you this question. Besides that trade, is there any other trades you found really interesting? There were a bunch of trades. The funny thing was, not as many really huge trades as much as we saw after the Cleveland stuff came out. But anything really kind of, you know, raise your eyebrow?
I'm based in Dallas, so I'm biased to be looking at, you know, Dallas moves too. Mm-hmm. But I thought that three teamer with Denver, New York, and Dallas was interesting. Personally, I thought it made sense for all sides. You know, it was an indictment on the Nuggets' failure when they drafted Emmanuel Mudiay. But, you know, I think at this stage, trading a Mudiay and getting some guard help back in return and not having to give up a first-round pick, I think that made sense for them. New York giving up Doug McDermott but taking a flyer on a guard who's still really, really young, while they still have some, you know, Denver's pushing for the playoffs, but New York still has, you know, time to evaluate young players, give them, you know, giving someone like Moutier minutes. As long as he doesn't take away minutes from Ntilikina, then I think that's an interesting move, and then they can spend some time figuring out whether they like Moutier or not. And then Dallas picked up some wing depth and got a second round pick out of it too, and I think that makes sense for them. You know, it's amazing how few wings they've had pretty much all season. So grabbing one more guy who could be a rotation player over the next few years, possibly, you know, if they mold him right, you know, in Doug McDermott, I don't see any real issue with that.
Yeah, my only thing about the trade was for New York, and you touched on it a bit, is how Moutier and Ntilikina are gonna fit together, and what are you doing? Like, you know, I want them to give, and I'm just gonna say call him Frank because I can't say his last name several times. I want him to give Frankie a chance to kind of really develop, and I'm worried about whether it becomes harder now when he's got a split time with Moutier. I'm not ready to give up on Moutier. Like you said, he's young, and it's hard to kind of. Sometimes it's fit. You know, we saw it with Chris Dunn, who looked really bad last year. It just didn't look like, you know, really that much of a player. He goes to Chicago and, you know, works on his shot and kind of develops and has a coaching staff that kind of believes in him and situation. Like, there's a lot less pressure to try to make the playoffs and all of that. Like, we saw that Dunn is kind of blossoming into a player. And he's older than Moutier. So I'm not ready to give up on Moutier. I'm just concerned of the development of both guys. It's hard when you try to develop both at the same time, you know, and make sure they get enough minutes. So if they play them together, that's fine, but it's going to be really weird shooting wise. I mean, it's very duplicate guys. So I'm curious to see how the Knicks work that. But besides that, I mean, good value in the trades. I mean, they, you know, nobody really gave up too much. I don't know how much Doug McDermott's going to help the Knicks, you know, and I think Denver getting Devin Harris is a good. Helps them in kind of the playoff run, getting another veteran guard to kind of help sort of push and keep them going.
Harris is a backcourt cut extraordinaire. He's going to be so good with Jokic.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
They're going to connect on that over and over and over again, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and with that passing from Jokic, like, this is great. Like you said, he's the perfect fit for Jokic. The one trade that really kind of caught my eye was Elfrid Payton going to Phoenix for just a second-round pick.
Oh, you might say that.
Yeah, it was just a pretty – I mean, for Phoenix, who generally I'm pretty critical, made a really smart trade. I mean, a second-round pick to take a flyer on this guy and see what he can do. I mean, I prefer he'd get a haircut. I think it affects his shot and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm not hip and I have the understanding of cool hair these days. I'm just trying to hold mine. So – I thought it was a good value trade for Phoenix.
Yeah, I like it. Obviously, you know, Phoenix needs point guards. They're lacking there. I think I heard on some podcast yesterday that their backup is a guy who tried out, like, spent $150 for one of those D League tryouts
right.
or G League tryouts, and you know, now is actually, like, playing NBA minutes. So, you know, props to him, but that's probably not, you know, like, a serious part of their future. So, yeah, no, I think it's a good to take a flyer on. You know, the Suns still need talent badly. You know, they are, you know, they have a vast collection of interesting players, but very few proven ones. And, you know, the more they can kind of work the fringes and, you know, bring players in exactly like this, just for flyers, just to see whether they like them, whether, you know, this could be a core piece moving forward, or whether they're just kind of kicking the cans on it.
Right.
You know, I think the more they can do that, you know, the more they can increase their chances, the more likely they're going to actually hit on someone. So, you know, I like this move. And do you remember if the second round pick is protected at all?
I will Google that as we talk.
Right, because obviously Phoenix, like, could be the top overall pick, you know, that could be 31st, but
right.
I think either way, I think that's probably worth it to me. You know, it's a slightly steeper price to pay than usually when we're talking about second round picks, but I'd prefer someone be aggressive. Like if you have the 31st overall pick, you're probably looking for an Elfrid Payton anyway, so, you know, I'm here for that deal. I think it's a good move.
Actually, it's not even Phoenix's pick, if I have it correctly from from FanSided, it's the better one between Charlotte's 2018 second round pick, Memphis 2018 second round pick, or Miami's 2018 second round pick.
I didn't know
Phoenix had that many second round picks.
I like that then. And man, Orlando's so low on Peyton compared to what they probably could have got a year or two ago for him.
Yeah, it's one of those cases. We saw it last year with the Sixers, just holding on to a asset for too long, and it just kind of depreciates, and you got to sell high as soon as you can. What teams did you feel needed to make a trade and didn't? Because there were definitely a few teams that were quiet. And it's not that – I want to be clear too. I'm sure it's not that they didn't try. I don't think people understand how hard it is to put a trade package together. And on the trade deadline, your phones are all blowing up. So, you know, what teams did you think needed to make a trade and just didn't do it?
And I'll also point out that a lot of these teams will probably get buyout candidates too.
Yes.
So, I know we're going to talk about the buyout market in a little bit as well, but there's a lot of depth in the buyout market. So some of these teams are probably purposely biding out the trade deadline. But you know, just starting with the teams on top, you know, I was a little surprised to see you know, the Raptors and the Celtics both bow out and not do anything. I was really expecting, you know, Tyreke Evans to move. It sounds like Memphis was more at fault for that than anything, and
right.
they just wouldn't take anything but a first round pick, which were just not on the table during this trade deadline. But beyond that, you know, I thought one or both of them would have looked into things. There's a rumor really early in the day that Toronto was talking with Los Angeles about DeAndre Jordan, which
I thought
was
that.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
And I really like that. You know, it didn't obviously work out, but I like Toronto saying, you know, this may hurt us in 3 or 4 years, but you know, just like with the amount of salary that we might have to commit. But I like them going for it now. And I think that's a good sign that they really are, you know, they recognize what they have this season and maybe next season, and they're going to go for it as soon, you know, as much as they can.
Yeah, for me, the one team I thought I wish made the trade was Oklahoma City. I wish they found a way to get Avery Bradley.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't possible. Maybe it just wasn't. You know, I mean, I know they don't have a first round pick to give at all until like 2022, but you know, I think just the loss of Roberson is really going to hurt them come playoff time. And part of me thinks they got so hyped up by the Warriors' win, you know, when they beat the Warriors, that they felt like they didn't really need to make a trade. And then, granted, they lose to the Lakers last night without Melo and Westbrook, so obviously it was all just Paul George. But I felt like defensively, they need another piece to really kind of make that run at teams. And I think that's something where I'm just kind of like, man, I really wish they had made a trade. But these things are hard to put together. You touched on the Memphis thing. I don't know what Memphis is thinking. You hold out a guy for 2 weeks, basically, because, like, we're going to trade him. And then, you know, I thought the offer Denver gave him was pretty good, the one that Zach Lowe was reporting, which was Moutier and a second-round pick for Tyreke Evans.
Right.
I'm like, you get a young player to, again, just kind of see what he has and see if you can't develop him and stuff like that, and you're getting a second-round pick. And it's not like, again, you just held this dude out for 2 weeks. Like, you can't really just be like, nope, we're going to stand pat. Like, it's weird to bring him back in the fold now. Are they going to buy him out, or are they going to try to re-sign him? Like, I'm just confused by what Memphis's thinking was.
It's very weird. The exact reason you sign these players well, I mean, in Memphis' case, obviously they were trying to compete this year. But, you know, you sign these one-year deals with players, you know, whose values have depreciated, and you sign them with the idea, you know, the player is signing them with the idea that his value is going to get boosted back up with a successful season. He's like, you know, I'm going to come to this place, and, you know, this is where I'm going to be able to be successful here. And he was. And his value did rise back up. And then Memphis just, like, they didn't do anything with it. And with a team that, like, clearly isn't going anywhere this season, you know, I agree. That just did not make a lot of sense for me. And then the neighboring city of Atlanta, neighboring loosely, but same region. I was pretty surprised they didn't move on from anyone, too. There may have been no takers for someone like Kent Bazemore. You know, their situation may have been more just like no takers for their players. But they had a few guys who I thought, you know, maybe get bought out now and should be interesting. You know, are interesting pieces for a bench somewhere.
Yeah, and again, the buyout market we'll get into is going to be quite robust. I do want to talk about the Clippers a little bit, because a lot of people seem to be upset that they didn't move DJ or things like that. And There's a couple of things with the whole. I like what the Clippers are doing. I like that they didn't panic and felt like they had to make a trade. The extension for Lou Williams is going to be such a great trade asset over the summer and towards next year's deadline that I think they'll even get more for him during that run, especially in the summer. I think if he continues this season, that they might actually get a pretty damn good piece out of that. The other side of it is I don't think DJ's opting out. I think he'd be stupid to do that, to be honest. I don't think the money's there for him. I think it's just going to be a really tight free agent market, and I think it's not really smart for him to opt out of his contract. So, you know, I think he'll opt in, and then again, it's another trade asset for them next year. That's just an assumption on my end. You know, if he opts out, I think he's going to lose a ton of money and doesn't realize it, and knowing him, he'll fire his agent afterwards. But I just like what they're doing, and the fact is, like, if he opts out, I don't think they're going to make that much of a bid to re-sign him. I think they're just going to keep the cap space. And again, like we talked about with the Lakers, having a healthy cap space situation allows you to be players in several different things, not just in free agency. Allows you to play in the trade market and look at what Brooklyn has done by loading up their draft asset cupboards by taking on contracts. You know, Damari Carroll, getting D'Angelo Russell, you know, by taking on the Mozgov contract. I think having salary cap is a really space is a really important thing, and I just really like what they did.
I agree with you. I think that this was not, you know, it seemed like when they traded Griffin that those where everything was headed, but I think that it could have been, and I think that if they wanted to do that, you know, I think, you know, if the deals had been there, I don't think there would have been anything wrong with that. But I like this approach too, and I like being, you know, patient with it, and I agree with you. Cap space is a you know, because it flips back and forth. You know, the NBA is cyclical, and I think cap space has become a little bit of a underrated asset again, where you know, teams that have it, you know, have some value and have some things they can do that, you know, the rest of the NBA just doesn't value, especially after, you know, the 2016 summer where everyone is just like still reeling from these bloated contracts that did not age anywhere close to as well as people thought they would. You know, and the cap is, you know, gone up very slowly at this rate. You know, I think when you consider all those things, having cap space and you know, in the off season, you know, this off season, the next off season, I think that's a thing worth having, and I think that you can play for real value somewhere else. So, I agree. I like what the Clippers did. I don't think that they had to make a move on either of those players. I'm still a little bit surprised about the Lou Williams deal.
Right.
I hope you're right that he does have as much value. I could see him. Not, you know, he is 32, I think, turning 33 soon. So, and you know, signing him through age 35 is a bit of a commitment. But you know, at the same time, you know, it's not that much. $8 million a year is very reasonable for a player like him.
It's less than what Jordan Clarkson's getting. You know,
exactly.
You know, and I'd rather have him than Jordan Clarkson, to be honest. And it's not, and the last year is not even guaranteed. I think it's either a team option or like 1.5 guaranteed.
That's a good point. Yeah, that team option does help things. I think so. I agree. He'll definitely be a trade asset as years or you know as time comes. And if there wasn't anything on the market for him this year, then you know, and it looks increasingly like there wasn't, which is probably why they ended up re-signing him. Then you know, I think that makes sense.
I think it goes into what we're going to talk about next, which is they realized they couldn't get a first round pick for him this year, and they just said, hey. Look, I bet they can get one, you know, next year or over the summer or even on draft day. But before we get into that topic, I do want to let you know, like, one of the reasons why I also think DJ is going to opt in is that, you know, from my sources, is that he's a big gelato fan. And
is he now?
Yeah, you know, those are my sources. Those are my sources. And something that also...
He's always looked like a gelato guy to me. He's always, you know, he just had a gelato guy appearance. Well,
yeah.
That makes sense.
You know, and the other thing about it, too, and I don't think people understand this about gelato, is it's very helpful in injury prevention, which is something that might be very important for IT coming up. But it also might explain DeAndre Jordan's durability over the years. You know, and I know the best gelato place, Tim. Forget, not just in L.A., in all of the land. I'm talking about Uli's Gelateria. They have two locations. One in downtown LA in the Spring Arcade in between 5th and 6th Street, and another one by the Grove on 3rd and Crescent Heights. And I'm telling you, you can't go wrong with some of the most amazing flavors. Stuff that you didn't even, I didn't even know you could make a flavor out of, like beet tarragon, which, you know, when you hear that, you're like, I don't know how that works. And then you taste it and you're like, oh, this is amazing. It's, you know, beautiful place, great staff, lovely people, great flavors, beautiful colors out of their gelato. I can't recommend it enough. Uli's Gelateria. If you're in the area, definitely check it out. If you're nursing an injury, it will make you heal faster. I'm just, you know, there's no scientific data. I just know this for a fact. That's my gelato ad for the day.
I gotta fly out to LA, man. I am currently nursing a swollen knee because I landed on it wrong trying to do some pickup hoops, which was a mistake. Never do sports. It only ends poorly. But
what's your pickup game? But
I'll hit you up because I might need to fly out there right now.
Perfect. What's your pickup game, Tim?
I like to describe myself as a broken Chandler Parsons, or just Chandler Parsons in that case.
I was gonna say more broken Chandler Parsons.
You know, so like, I'm not gonna ever do anything off the dribble, unless I have like a guy flying at me. But if you create some offense for me, and then I can get someone up in the air with the pump fake, you know, I'm a okay shooter, and then, you know, I can do a few things off the dribble. As long as I don't have to beat anyone, as long as I can like take advantage of a moving defense. So definitely like a fourth or fifth guy in your starting five, you know, if you're willing to have me there. But hopefully do a few smart things, as I like to think.
I'm the ultimate like utility man. I'm whatever the team needs. If we need passing, I got it. If we need defense, cool. Shooting, I'm not a great shooter, but I'm a good scorer. Like, I'll make the buckets when we need them. And, you know, I kind of like to refer to myself as Manu because I'm also lefty.
You know, dude, I was gonna say a little bit of Marcus Smart, since that, you know, not a good shooter, but when they need you there,
yeah,
you're there. I respect that.
I'd like to say I'm more Manu. I'm also balding. So, you know, I'm kind of going there with Manu, so kind of having that same career arc. but we digressed a little bit. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the first round picks. I mean, you know, we've seen it in the past where teams just throw first round picks in deals like candy. And, you know, the only one we saw move was Cleveland trading their only first round pick their first round pick, not the Brooklyn pick, to the Lakers. You know, there's rumors of Boston willing to give up Marcus Smart for a first-round pick. We talked about Memphis wanting a first-round pick for Evans. The Clippers weren't going to give up Bradley or Lou Williams unless they got a first-round pick. And it just, none of that materialized. You know, what are teams valuing it more? Like, what's the value of a first-round pick right now?
It's clearly up. You know, it's clearly pretty high. And I'm trying to think through the various reasons. And I think, you know, it's obviously not just one reason. There are a number, but you know, I think, you know, the obvious go-to one is that yes, it's considered a pretty good draft this coming season,
right?
A pretty deep draft from what I've heard. You know, I know especially the lottery is pretty stacked, but I've heard people saying that it's deeper even beyond that. I think that 2016 offseason where everybody loaded up with money and now a lot of people don't have cap space. I think it's pretty important for teams that are, you know, kind of right up against the cap or way over it and don't see any relief coming, that they can have a low-cost, salary-controlled, hopefully rotation player is the idea, or somebody who can be a addition to the team, you know, for the next 4 years. So I think that's definitely a factor in there. And then I just think that, you know, I think Kevin Pelton from ESPN made this point where, you know, we used to have general managers and team building philosophies that varied from team to team. And more we're kind of all condensing the idea to the same. You know, everybody kind of has the same philosophies where, right, you know, you got to value young players, you got to value first round picks. And you know, just the way that people build teams is, you know, more and more similar as time goes on. And I think that, you know, Kevin's point was that that's just going to make it harder to make deals because, you know, if everybody has the same thoughts about what a first-round pick means to them, then they're less likely to give it up. They're less likely to deal it because they feel differently about, you know, somebody else's, you know, if one team feels differently about their first-round pick than another team, you know, that just isn't there as frequently. So I think the combination of all those factors, and maybe you have another factor or two that they're kind of contributing to this, but I think those are, you know, at least in my mind, a few of the biggest reasons why, you know, we only saw one first round pick move, and it was from Cleveland, a team that already has a much better first round pick in Brooklyn's.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on all the points. I mean, there's so many things that go into it. The one thing I'd say about a draft pick is, you know, once a team selects a player, it's on them to develop the player too. You know, when you're drafting a guy, you're not just looking at what they are now. You're kind of projecting, what are they going to be 2 years from now? What are they, you know, when their first option's up? What are they going to be? What can they be in their third year? What can they be in their fourth year? And then restricted free agency and all of that. Like, you're kind of focused in on these guys, and I think it's on them to figure out, like, it's not just when you draft him, can we, you know, what player is he, can we develop him into what we need, can he be a productive NBA player? And I think that's an important aspect of the draft that kind of gets washed away a lot, you know, and I just think the value of picks is, if you go through the history of NBA teams, and, you know, I might spend a lot of time this summer working on something like this, but, you know, compare San Antonio to Phoenix. You know, when San Antonio, which is still in their dynasty run, like, how often do they trade a first-round pick? I mean,
I can't think of any off the top of my head. They trade four picks, like in the Kawhi Leonard deal.
Yeah, and it's a rare thing, you know. And meanwhile, teams like Phoenix during the Nash era were just selling off picks. And it's like, yo, those are when you're a salary cap team that's trying to contend, those draft picks are your opportunity to get a viable player that can help your rotation and get them on the cheap, and control them. Unfortunately, this is a wrong word to use, but basically control their future. You know, you decide to pick up the options. Restricted free agency is built for you to decide if you want to match a guy or not.
Right.
And I think that's such an important thing for contending teams. We're seeing it with Golden State. They don't trade first round picks really that much, you know, and when they see value in the draft, they go after a guy. You know, we saw what they did, you know, with Chicago buying the second round pick to get Jordan Bell. I think there's a value, especially for contending teams. And part of me wonders if Cleveland could have held that first round pick and still made that trade. I don't know how hard. I know the Lakers wanted a cap space. I would have pushed them and just been like, you're getting cap space. I don't know if you – I want to give up this pick and try to hold on to both picks. So I see the value of it. I see it just being really important. Boston, another team that just hoards first-round picks. They're not trading a first-round pick. They'll take one, but they're not going to trade one. And I think that's such an important thing. You know, we're seeing, like, with the Clippers during that run, Doc was giving out first-round picks like candy, not even playing young guys, and give him credit this year, you know, playing a lot more younger players and, the using the two-way contracts and all of that good stuff. Like, these things matter. Like, these picks matter and carry a huge value, I think, that teams in the past didn't value as much as they're seeing it now. And I love that you mentioned what Kevin Pelton had said and your thoughts. Everybody's kind of along the same lines now of how you need to build a team. And it's getting pretty interesting in that regard.
Yeah, and, you know, it does make things a little bit less interesting because, you know, everything being so similar, it makes it harder to make deals. And, you know, we probably won't see as many wild, you know, massive swings. But I think ultimately, you know, it's just a sign that the NBA is getting smarter and the NBA is, you know, less willing to make, you know, there's less teams that are going to make massive mistakes and really, you know, leverage their future for temporary relief and things like this. And you still see it, and we're still going to see it. But I think it's a sign of just kind of where the league is headed. And then I also think that, you know, like you mentioned the Clippers, who gave up first rounders, like you said, like candy, and they would often do it just like for a rotation piece or someone who they hoped would be in the rotation. Whereas, you know, it's not that like a team like Boston wouldn't trade first rounders for Anthony Davis, but right. They're not going to do it until they find a deal that, you know, they know is going to work out. They're not giving those away for a Tyreek Evans deal. Right. Obviously, they're not, you know, that is not enough for them. That is not important enough for them to make moves like that. So there's something to be said to just, like, you know, holding onto your assets, holding onto your ammunition, and then if the right thing does come around, then you actually have the firepower to kind of go out there and pull the trigger.
Yeah, absolutely. We alluded to it quite a bit, and we think it might be why some of the teams didn't really make big trades. What's your take on the buyout market? I mean, it sounds like we're going to have a robust buyout market. It really sounds like Joe Johnson's going to be available. Derrick Rose is going to be available. I don't know if anybody's interested, but Papa Giannis is available. but we're going to
– Poor Kings, man. Poor Kings fans.
I feel bad for the fans, but, man, that's a whole other podcast. But what do you think is going to – you know, are guys like Brooke Lopez going to end up on the market? Like, what do you think of the buyout market? Are we going to have a big buyout market, or are we just going to find out that a lot of guys aren't going to be available?
I feel like a lot of the names that we were hoping could be available will probably end up staying with their teams. You know, it does sound like Brooke Lopez and Ersan Ilyasova are two names that might stick around. Just to rattle off some names right now, Marco Bellinelli, Tyson Chandler, Vince Carter, Tony Allen, Brandon Wright, Corey Brewer, Tyreke Evans is probably going to stay, I think the last I heard, but we'll have to see about that. Boris Diaw might be coming back over from overseas. So there's definitely names out there. And then Joe Johnson and Derrick Rose, like you mentioned, you know, there's definitely names. And I think, you know, a lot of those players I would like to see on the bench of a team, of a playoff team, a contending team. You know, I think that it sounds like, you know, pretty much all four of the main contenders, and I guess Cleveland too, you know, who's definitely, so all five main contenders in Golden State, Houston, Toronto, Boston, and in Cleveland are probably all going to be looking for, you know, one more guy if they have that available. Joe Johnson makes a lot of sense to me in Golden State. I think, you know, they might be able to use him well there. But, you know, he's the type of veteran player who'd kind of make sense everywhere.
Right.
If Tyson Chandler hits the market, man, he would be coveted by, should be coveted by pretty much anyone who needs big man depth.
Yeah.
Because he's still a favorite of mine, still the best quote in the NBA, best quote in the entire league. And then beyond that, you know, that's a very very journalist thing to care about. But Vince Carter would be interesting. You know, I'd love to see. I think I saw somebody hinting at a Toronto reunion possibly. So if he does hit the open market, that would be you know, definitely be a little emotional. Hit you right in the feels and all that. Be a nice closing of a loop. I guess if he stayed there at least, because it does sound like he wants to play even another year past this. Which all power to him. I hope he plays till he's 55.
Yeah, I mean, get him on that TB12.
Exactly. Yeah, so there's names out there, and there's interesting options to be had, and I think that we will probably see, you know, at least three or four, you know, playoff locks, contending type teams, you know, add a player in all likelihood, and you know, just from what I gather.
Yeah, and first off, I'd love to see Vince Carter on a contender.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, yes. The guy has been a great for the league. He's, from what he seems, I've never met him, but from what he seems, like a great guy and just a great teammate. Like, I just want to see him in a good situation. You know, Joe Johnson's a guy, like you said, he can fit anywhere. I think he's going to be the first guy, you know, come buyout market time. You know, his cell phone's going to be blowing up. His agent better charge his phone. It's going to get, he's going to have every team wanting him. I think, yeah, gosh, like there's so many. I mean, like if Channing Frye, I don't know if he's going to get bought out or not, or seek a buyout, but he'd be a great fit in Golden State. Just, again, personality-wise, feels like a perfect fit. Spread the floor shooting, another thing they covet. I think that would be a good thing. I'd be really interested to see if Tyson Chandler hit the market where he ended up as well. Gosh, like it's – the buyout market might be just as fun as the trade deadline.
Yeah, it really might be. And that's the, I think that's, again, you know, just kind of the way the NBA is headed, where, you know, if teams aren't willing to give up first round picks and, you know, aren't even always willing, you know, they throw around second round picks, but if first round picks aren't moving and, you know, the buyouts may just be an easier way for candidates, you know, players who don't want to be on losing teams to end up in places where they want to be. So, Vince Carter on a winning team would be like what was it, Tracy McGrady on the Spurs in 2013, except, you know, then they blew that series. But man, that would be great for, you know, one of those players who's got his entire career to end up as a bench guy and finally make it happen.
Yeah, and I think part of it too is with the buyout, this is why we didn't see first round pick. Why, if you're Boston, why give up a first round pick when you might be able to get Joe Johnson? You know, and it, right. In that sense, and I mean, same thing. He's only going to be here for till the end of the season, and then you'll figure out what you're going to do. So it kind of makes sense also as to why first round picks didn't move. It kind of all played in. One other thing I wanted to mention that Amin El Hassan actually made a great point about first round picks is, you know, he kind of blames Lou Williams for taking such a the deal that he took at like $7 or $8 million a year. Kind of hurt the market because now teams, you know, Memphis might be like, we, if that's what the going rate is for a guy like, you know, Williams, like we might be able to sign Evans to a deal like that, and so on. So it kind of felt like the way El Hassan was saying it was that, you know, Williams might have set the market, you know, relatively low for guys. I want to touch a little bit on free agency. I know I didn't put it in the rundown, so I know I might be catching you a little off guard and unprepared, but it looks like we're not going to get a lot of movement in free agency. Like, I just don't see a lot of money. After LeBron, after Chris Paul, who I think is just going to re-sign in Houston, you know, Paul George, who I think is going to re-sign in Oklahoma City, like, this is a bad year to be a free agent.
Yeah, DeMarcus Cousins, who I think is going to re-sign in, you know, New Orleans at this point. So, yeah, I think that Lou Williams is a what Lou Williams signed was a bad sign for things to come for free agents. He might have gone a little bit under what he could have gotten, but I think there was a reason he signed now, and that he sees the depreciated free agency market that is coming for us, and it may be even a little bit lower than we thought for players, because you know there is cap space out there, but you know, like, the Lakers are not about to throw contracts out at people unless it's LeBron and Paul George. You know, if you know, they'll probably do a bunch of 1-year deals again if they don't have, you know, if they can't get their big stars like they're gunning for. Likewise, I think that teams will be, you know, a bit more conservative. Like, I think we've learned our lessons since 2016, and that everybody is kind of letting the free agency market, you know, even itself back out. And I don't think there's going to be a lot of big signings.
I don't trust teams in learning their lessons. I honestly feel like the next spike gap, cap spike, we're just going to do it all over again.
In all likelihood, yeah. No, you're definitely right about that. But then hopefully at least like this coming off season, we may back off a little ways and let those 2016 deals kind of run its course.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I think we're going to start to see this year. I mean, I think you're right. We're going to see a lot of 1-year deals for big money. Like, if you're the Lakers and you strike out, you know, why wouldn't you just sign IT to a big, you know, to the deal you signed KCP to, you know, and just say like 1 year and then we're going to be off him and still have our cap space. You know, I may not recommend it again because I just think having that free space is good come trade deadline, but I could see a lot of teams doing what JJ Redick did, basically.
Right Yeah, I was gonna say JJ and KCP were interesting. You know, I'm trying to think of similar situations to those two in the past 5 years, and those do feel, you know, here and there you can find some examples, but not quite on the same level. We're like, JJ obviously could have got long-term money somewhere. But he chose that 1-year deal, and I think a lot of teams may be offering stuff like that. I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, and God, it's going to be brutal if you're a restricted free agent. I'm sorry, Marcus Smart. It's going to be rough.
Yeah. Good luck to him.
You're going
to
regret not taking those deals in October. Like, a lot of those restricted free agents. Like, it's just not, there's just no money, and I think they we're kicking a dead horse, I guess. I'm so bad with phrases, Tim. I don't know what's going on. I guess I haven't recovered. Like, I'll be honest, the trade deadline yesterday wiped me out. By like noon, I was like, okay, I need a minute to reassess everything.
Man, yeah, and on Pacific time, that thing starts early and just like doesn't, you know, gets done early. And now, it's still too early. At least I had until like 2 p.m. to kind of stretch out and process it all.
I always laugh about it as a team. the noon trade deadline for us on the West Coast, I'm like, man, you got to be on the phones at 5 a.m. with some of these East Coast teams so that you don't miss out a deal. I wanted to share quickly a story. I tweeted about it yesterday. My last year with the Clippers, we were flying out the day of the deadline. And this is normal for every team. You know, a lot of teams playing on the road. today, but we were involved in a couple of deals, and our flight was set to take off at noon, which is right at the trade deadline, which led to an awkward moment when a few deals were made, but we basically ended up sitting on the runway for about an extra 40 minutes waiting for these deals to go through and then basically asking these players to kindly leave the plane. And it was just,
oh, man.
It was such an incredibly awkward, you know, like, you know, I'm sitting way in the back. So, you know, video guys, not a lot of people understand the structure of the team planes, but it's usually players up front, coaches in the middle, and then support staff in the back. And, you know, it was just kind of watching, you know, one or two guys going up and being notified by the coaches that, hey, we just traded you. So you're going here, call this guy, we're going to get your bags off the plane, but please kindly exit. Like, I was just like, we didn't plan this flight very well.
Right.
Maybe we should have left at 2.
Yeah. That's funny. Yes, there's little stuff like that you never think about until it happens.
Yeah, nobody, I mean, let's be fair. I mean, I'm not trying to blame it. Nobody thought about it until we were getting on the plane going like, ooh, this is a bad idea. Tim, plug your stuff, man. I really appreciate you coming on. Tell the people where they can find you and what you're working on.
Yeah. So obviously just SBNation.com/MBA. And then on Twitter, I'm Tim_Cato, C-A-T-O. Got a few feature stories I'm in the process of working on. So nothing imminent to shout out yet, but keep an eye on the Twitter feed. I have some fun stuff coming up about you know, some feature stories about interesting things, and at least I hope they are. So just keep an eye out.
Well, you wrote one of my favorite things, which is you clearly didn't take the advice, which was how to land.
Yes. No, I missed out on my own story, but yeah, no, that was a fun thing, and that's the type of stories I'm trying to get do more of, just stuff that, you know, you don't really think about until you start reading it, and then you're like, yeah, actually I do want to know how an NBA player should land and you know, how they prevent injury and while doing stuff like that.
And that carries a lot of weight right now with the Kristaps Porzingis injury.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, hey, Tim, thank you so much, man, for coming on the show.
Not a problem. Thanks, Mo.
And that's it for our show. I hope you enjoyed this trade deadline special. Be sure to rate us, like us, leave reviews on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, wherever else you go to listen to your podcasts. Have yourselves a great weekend.